Welcome to Dynasty Life. I am Theo Greminger. Redraft ends, but Dynasty is life. And I'm excited to be joined today by Scott Barrett of Fantasy Points. Scott's been on First Class Fantasy. Scott's been on press coverage, but Scott has never sat in the Dynasty Life seat. So welcome to the show for the first time, Scott. You're crushing it this time of year. This is like your time to shine. You're coming out with all this content about all these rookies. You're grinding. And thank you very much for making the time to come on this podcast today. Let everybody know what you're dropping over at Fantasy Points this time of year.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here. Like I said, big fan of your show. I just dropped my rookie tight end article, my rookie running back article, and either later this week or early next week, 17,500 words on the rookie wide receivers. I really think it's like the most in-depth, comprehensive analytics dive into the rookie class. Like I was telling you before the show, like, I don't care if anyone reads it. I write these articles for me, but I love it. It's a total passion project. It's, you know, maybe too in-depth, maybe too wordy, but yeah, really proud of it. It's all about like what analytics are most important, most predictive at each position. And I think I do a pretty good job at that.
Yeah, and I'll give you credit on this one. I've ingested a ton of content when it comes to these rookies, whether it's guests on my podcast, whether it's articles I've written myself, my research. I've talked to pretty much everybody, and I've read pretty much everything out there. Your running back article, no matter how in-depth you think you have it, even content creators listening to this, with this running back class, there's something in Scott's article that you're going to pick up, and it's going to help you with your rookie evaluation process. I mean, Scott's even gone down to like what schemes would be ideal for these particular running backs. You're incredibly detail-oriented that. We're going to talk a little bit about your running back ranks sort of later on in the show and sort of your process with how you're evaluating them. But first, I want to start out with some of my evergreen questions. And this has been one that I've been asking everybody on press coverage, everybody on Dynasty Life, and it really gets you thinking. And we'll take this simply for the 2024 rookie class. If you could know the final 2024 stats for any single player in this rookie class, who would it be?
So I think maybe I'm cheating a little bit, but like the answer to this question has to be a quarterback, because you know the quarterback stats, then you kind of know the pass catcher stats. So you're killing multiple birds with one stone. For me, it's Caleb Williams. Obviously he's going to Chicago. We know that. Stack supporting cast. But like the reason why I want to know this is because like I secretly want to just make Jaden Daniels my QB1. So like if he puts up, I don't know, mid-range QB2 production, like I'd feel good about Jaden Daniels as my QB1, where it's, yeah, again, supposedly historically great prospect, the next Aaron Rodgers, great landing spot, ideal draft capital, but it's like such a massive edge, that Konami code upside for Jaden Daniels, who like looks, I mean, he looks awesome on film to me. I'm not a film guy, but like, it really looks like the worst case scenario is he's Justin Fields, which means he's like a mid-range QB1 in all the games he's starting. And he just doesn't last long in the league, but probably holds on to dynasty value longer than he should. And so, yeah, it's just like, do I have the stones to make this guy my QB1? Knowing that answer would make me feel a lot better about that.
That's an interesting way of putting it. I mean, when you say Caleb Williams, for me, it's this sort of unlocks the best ball and redraft potential, because I feel like Caleb Williams has immense potential this year. But Jaden Daniels, you nailed it as well. With that rushing upside, he certainly can make a huge impact on all levels of fantasy, not only Dynasty. And it's sort of like the how much of a difference is it between Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels? I think that also is a big difference for Superflex rookie draft, because you can get a massive package by trading down from like the 101 to the 103 right now.
If Jaden, which I recommend.
You recommend it. Well, keep that going. You do recommend that.
Yeah. So like, again, I'm not a film guy. We have Brett Whitefield on our staff who runs Fantasy Points data. He's head of all charting, worked at PFF for a number of years, like tremendous film mind, like one of the best track records in the space. Like his the most predictive thing for wide receivers I've ever seen is just his film scores. But yeah, he doesn't have Caleb Williams as the QB one in this class. He had a lot of concerns. He's not sure he can be like an immediate producer. I definitely have Jaden Daniels above him for redraft. And I think it's a legitimate question for dynasty.
Brett's also trying to pump up JJ McCarthy as QB1 overall with any Caleb Williams criticism.
He called me months ago and he's like, you're going to be pissed about this. I'm like, why? What's going on? He's like, I watched every quarterback. I've watched every play at least twice. And my QB1 is JJ McCarthy. And I'm like, no, because like, if he stinks, this just makes us look so bad. But he's like, listen, I don't have hot takes. It's just like opinions I believe in. And he's usually right. Like he said, Puka Nacua reminded him of Justin Jefferson. I'm like, dude, you're crazy. And lo and behold, he sets the rookie receiving yardage record. And so like at this point, like, people weren't sure McCarthy was going to be a round one pick. And then like everything since then is like, oh, no, he's really good. He's a top 10 pick or whatever. So feel a little bit better about it, but still makes me nervous. But hey, I mean, JJ McCarthy goes to Minnesota, right? Like that's going to be nice.
Yeah. And I gave Brett a big credit for this when he came on press coverage was he had the enthusiasm for JJ McCarthy before it was kind of cool. Now mm-hmm. The market hasn't come around to McCarthy as QB1 overall, but his value in
dynasty. Well, remember, those are NFL rankings, not fantasy. Yeah. Like, there's no world where McCarthy is a fantasy QB1. But I mean, 108, that's good value. You respect Brett as much as I do.
Yeah, he's locked in at 108. I would say that. So Brett was way ahead of that, like by like 2 months. So hat tip to him. One other question I've been asking everyone. We've sort of seen this, and you've been doing dynasty content for a while. You've seen, you know, impactful rookie seasons from the wide receiver position, but it certainly seems to be amping up in terms of frequency. You've now had a wide receiver finish in the top six PPR scorers in three of the last four seasons. Justin Jefferson, Ja'Marr Chase, and Puka Nacua last year, all top six performances. All huge values at ADP and redraft, huge best ball values. And we also had a tight end finish as tight end one overall last year in Sam Laporta, which was a huge hurdle, like a huge glass ceiling was broken to have a tight end finish number one overall. I think that we're going to see a rookie finish as wide receiver one overall sometime in the near future, whether it's this year, whether it's next year, whether it's 5 years from now, it's going to happen. If it's one of the big three in this rookie class, which player would it be? And in which NFL landing spot would it be?
Oh, man, that's such a good question. And unfortunately, it's not one I have a great answer to. I could see, I mean, like, yeah, Marvin Harrison Jr. to the Chiefs. Can I say that?
Sure. Can say anything. But how about Arizona, LA? Like,
right. So like, what are the most likely landing spots for each receiver? Marvin Harrison Jr. to the Cardinals. I absolutely love that. Trey McBride is an elite zone beater. And so you have Marvin Harrison Jr. on the outside in isolation, crushing against man. Like, I think that's like a perfect fit for that offense. And I could see him being really successful there, with Kyler Murray, a great quarterback. What's the most likely landing spot for Malik Nabers? I think it's the Giants at 106, which I think is also perfect because such an elite yak threat. Like, he can give you everything Brian Daboll was hoping for from Wandale Robinson, and then just also be a true number one receiver, shades of like Stephon Diggs plus, you know, like Wandale Robinson on like the more gadgety stuff. And then Romo Odunze, I think, most likely landing spot, maybe 110 to the Jets, where there's like shades of Davante Adams to his game, like elite deep threat, elite contested catch receiver, really good separator, fitting him up with Aaron Rodgers. Like, I think that'd be awesome. I don't know that I see like anywhere for like overall wide receiver one, just because like there's so many good wide receivers in the league. Like, Tyreek might be the best wide receiver ever, in my opinion, and Jefferson and Chase and so CeeDee Lamb on the ascension. So, but I mean, like all those spots, I could see these guys smashing and being like the overall wide receiver. What like you, I love, so like, I kind of don't like this wide receiver class, but I love the big three. Like the big three, I would take over any wide receiver over the last two draft classes and feel really good about that. Like, give me any of them over Drake London right now, I think. And I love Drake London.
Yeah. I love that response. And I think that the one big takeaway is Scott brought up Malik Nabers to the Giants. And I actually have optimism with that landing spot as well. A lot of people are like, oh, gross, the Giants, but we saw what a high target volume wide receiver like Stephon Diggs was able to do in a Brian Daboll offense instantly. Diggs went from like 100 targets to like 150 plus in just one landing spot. And again, you know, Josh Allen's not a New York Giant, but you also have the fact that Devin Singletary is probably the most productive skill position player on the offense right now. It would be the Malik Nabers show weekly. So I love, exactly. I love that.
They're going to get a quarterback next year if they don't get one this year. Who's going to get, like, obviously Daniel Jones, you can't have too much confidence in him, but it's just like his Nabers floor, especially year one, might be even higher than Harrison's or Odunze's, just because he's such a freak after the catch, forcing missed tackles, that you're going to see him get those design targets, those manufactured touches, screens, especially in a Brian Daboll system. And, you know, like that offense has nothing else. You know, Darren Waller threatening to retire, like no other wide receivers.
Go ahead, Darren.
So he'll get the volume at the very least, and he's damn good. So expect at least decent efficiency with that volume.
So you did this extensive running back piece, which I alluded to. It's great. It's not paywalled. You can go read it right now on Fantasy Points. Scott has it on his Twitter. But one thing that was a really interesting takeaway is you brought up quality of the running back class versus volume. Two-pronged question. Is this running back class a little bit underrated? Do you kind of share the mentality that everybody has that this is sort of a quote-unquote bad class? Or is it a class that could thrive if certain players land in voluminous situations, chances to get immediate touches? Take this question any way you want, just sort of a big picture view of this class.
Yeah. So this class reminds me a lot of 2022, where like Jonathan Brooks is like, he's my RB1, but he's a much lesser version of Breece Hall, who is my dynasty RB1. And then Trey Benson is like a slightly lesser version of Kenneth Walker. And then there's just like a whole bunch of question marks. I said like a lot of RB2s, backups, change of pace options, worthless roster cloggers. But I mean, like if my RB3 Blake Corum goes to the Chargers, then like, you know, he might be a mid round one pick. And like, that's the key thing with the running back position is like, talent's important, like nowhere near as much with quarterbacks or wide receivers. But like volume is like almost everything. Like it's as close to everything as you can come, where we've seen it so many times where like a mediocre running back, but in like a bell cow workload can be a low end fantasy RB1 pretty easily. And so like right now the class looks pretty shitty, but it's like, there's, you know, now in the running backs don't matter era, it's like teams aren't paying running backs. They're opting for more committee. And so like the position, which was already so scarce, is becoming even more scarce. And like, there's good landing spots. The Chargers, the Giants, the Panthers, the Cowboys, the Cowboys are probably like the dream landing spot. And so like, yeah, a guy I think is mid, if he goes to the right spot, could, you know, catapult up my rankings and be someone I'm really excited about. So like, that's the missing variable here. And it's a massively important one is draft capital and landing spot for running backs.
Yeah. And we're going to dive into a number of those running backs. We're also going to hear about three sleepers that Scott is very bullish on after we take a quick break.
This episode is brought to you by Player Profiler, the Dynasty Deluxe Package. The rankings are the best in the industry. It includes strategy mode, where you can say, hey, change the rankings to be win now. Oh, change the rankings to be productive struggle. There's also a draft planner to help strategize where you should take players, because the draft planner also includes ADP. There's a trade finder where we look up on My Fantasy League and we see trades that are done, including a particular player. Then there's a trade analyzer where you can plug in draft picks, players, and we assign a lifetime value to draft picks out 5 years. The best thing about our trade analyzer, it can't be gamed with volume. And there's mock draft data to see right now what's the market for player X versus player Y, including in the fall when very few mock drafts are happening. And our Dynasty Guide, the Dynasty Dominator, would cost you $10 on Amazon, but you get it for free with Dynasty Deluxe. And you get our Rookie Guide for free, a $25 value. So you get all of that for $45. So it's a great deal.
Welcome back to Dynasty Life. Scott always loves the Podfather's ads every time he comes on here.
So I can tell.
Yeah, it's hat tip to Matt. He's able to do those oftentimes in one take too, which is just fantastic. Damn. But Scott, you know, when you talk about, like, you're putting out a ton of content every single year, but one thing that people continually come back to when referencing your work is upside wins championships. And I think these three sleepers that you provided me, they all sort of fall in that category. Maybe quickly give us the four dummies version, like the very, very short breakdown of what Upside Wins Championships was. This was maybe 2020 you wrote this. It's excellent. I know you do an update every single year, but kind of break down the notion.
Yeah, this is what I would refer to as my magnum opus if fantasy expert could have one. It's basically the concept that a player's upside is exponentially more valuable than their downside is detrimental, especially in redraft. You always have the safety net of the waiver wire to fall back on. And just like as it relates to this rookie class is, like, let's say you have two prospects, right? You have Will Shipley, and let's say there's, I'm just making these up, by the way. Let's say there's a 99% chance he's like a guaranteed bust, zero snaps throughout his NFL career, and a 1% chance he's the next Christian McCaffrey. And then let's say you have Braylon Allen, and there's a 100% chance he's AJ Dillon. He's just literally AJ Dillon. It's not obvious to me that Braylon Allen should be ranked ahead of Will Shipley based on what we just explained. And so with that in mind, yeah, there's certainly some prospects in this class, maybe like two at each position, who, like, I'm firmly putting planting my flag on because their upside is so immense relative to cost. And honestly, for like quite a few of these guys, I think their floor is being underrated as well.
And I love the notion of upside wins championships in redraft. I think it's sort of an argument that I'd rather, you know, you're not trying to make a playoffs. You're trying to put together a roster that can blow your competition away. You know, you're basically building to finish first, as opposed to
first
building
out of 12 teams. That's not easy to do.
Yeah. And it's, you know, a lot of players read your article and then kind of will say, like, you know, I always make the playoffs. I never win. It's sort of taking on a little bit more risk, but for that ultimate reward and building a roster that is sort of unbeatable. It's a really great way of playing fantasy. Highly recommend you check out this article when it comes out. And the old ones are good too, just for, like Scott said, his opus. But when you talk about these three players, these sort of rookie sleepers, you're also talking about the draft capital that you'd have to spend in your rookie drafts. Unless we have something crazy occur during the NFL draft, all three of these players are going to be somewhat affordable. So why don't you take it from the top? There's the tight end position. It's Brock Bowers has had more steam than anybody since Kyle Pitts, and he has earned it. I think he's a great prospect. And then when it's a significant tier break from Bowers down to tight end two, then when you start talking about tight end two, if I ask 10 different people their tight end two, you're going to get a few people on Sanders, a few people on Sanat. There's going to be a couple other answers, but there's a tight end that you are very bullish on, and your research has led you to him. Why don't you talk about this player?
Yeah, so I deferred to Draft Capital and Brett Whitefield's film score more than I typically do, which is like almost entirely analytics based. And this guy's the consensus tight end 10, and I still like just I had to put him tight end 2, and that's Jaheim Bell. There's definitely a ton of red flags to this profile we can talk about, but just talking about the upside, he has the best ever single season by yards per route run in PFF college history. That's since 2014. Since 2020, ranks third best in career yards per route run behind only Brock Bowers and Kyle Pitts. He was over 2.1 career yards per route run from every alignment from the slot. He was better than Brock Bowers from out wide, from in line. For perspective, Jatavion Sanders, who like I do not like analytically, but is my tight end 3, he was below 1.25 in the slot, below 1.25 out wide. Running a high percentage of your routes from in line is sort of like an efficiency hack that bolsters your yards per route run. He really exploited that efficiency hack, whereas Bell and Bowers certainly did not. But the most important point I would say is he looks like the best after the catch tight end in at least a decade, by missed tackles forced per reception, by career yards after the catch per reception. He ranks best of any tight end, power five tight end in a decade. And no one comes close. Bowers is second. And like, you look at the chart and it's like tight cluster Bowers, Jaheim Bell. And yeah. And so that's the bull case argument. The red flags, the big one for me is just the, small sample size. He didn't run a ton of routes in that 1 year he broke the record. Two, I don't know that he's actually a tight end. He had more rushing yards than receiving yards 2 seasons ago. A lot of teams view him as a potential H-back or a tweener. That's a big red flag. But three, it's height. He's too small. He's a tweener. But I mean, you look at the height, he's exactly 1 inch shorter, 2 to 4 pounds lighter than Brock Bowers, Sam Laporta. He has bigger hands and a longer reach than both of them. So like that one isn't really all that compelling to me. And just like the upside here just far outweighs the concerns in what's like a weak class, or probably a weak class after Bowers.
Yeah, I love it. He runs a very low 40. And he was a transfer as well. And he's also surrounded by other NFL draft picks. So even in like FFPC leagues, this is a guy that you're not going to have to use a, early third on. This is a guy that's going to fall to like your late third round. So I think it's definitely a reasonable bet. And in terms of the size, Brett, I brought this up to as well. And Brett also brings up like the wingspan is excellent. So he's a little shorter, but he's long, so to speak, to use like an NBA term. And when you bring up the height, sort of when we look years ago and you looked at like the Gronkowskis, the Jimmy Grahams, the Tony Gonzalez, like the basketball type, the huge tight ends that were beasts athletically, those were the guys dominating fantasy. But if you look at sort of like the dynasty marketplace right now, Brock Bowers, Sam Laporta, Dalton Kincaid, Trey McBride, Evan Ingram, they're mm-hmm. all like 6'3", 6'4". So I think that the position is sort of changing a little bit for us as fantasy managers. There's always going to be that 6'7" dude who comes in and just crushes it, 6'6" guy. But the archetype for consistent fantasy production has been this sort of slightly smaller tight end. So
You see that with wide receivers now as well? Like, is the league not getting faster, skinnier, lighter, lower BMI, shorter? Look at Tank Dell, Devonta Smith. You're seeing it with running backs as well, Devon Achane. This might just be the way the NFL is headed.
Yeah, I think it's definitely something interesting for us to monitor, in dynasty theory and sort of change our priors. And, to get even a little bit further into the weeds, the sub 200 pound running backs, a bunch more of those guys have started to explode in terms of fantasy production with the Gibbs and the Achanes, Kyron Williams, mm-hmm. James Cook last year. So definitely interesting one. Before you know it, it's going to be a bunch of 180 pound guys on Sundays just running around quickly. But
I will say the new, the hip trap tackle rule.
Yeah.
That changes the equation a little bit. Then you kind of want bigger guys, because like it's harder for smaller cornerbacks to tackle a George Kittle or Derrick Henry. So that might veer things in the opposite direction. But outside of that, I'm with you. I see this as a recognizable trend across all positions.
Well, that's a great segue to your next sleeper, Scott, because this player certainly does not lack size and he doesn't lack athleticism. There's been sort of mixed steam in the dynasty marketplace on Keon Coleman of Florida State. I like him a little bit more than you do based on your rankings, but he also has a teammate. And this is a teammate that you're very bullish on at the wide receiver position, and that's Johnny Wilson. Why don't you talk about your enthusiasm for him?
Yeah. So like I said, I'm deferring more towards projected draft capital and Brett Whitefield's film score more than I typically do. And so you get to this case where it's like Brian Thomas. Yeah. I don't see him as a round one caliber wide receiver, but he's wide receiver 4. Adonai Mitchell, like there's zero redeeming qualities about his projected draft capital, but he's supposed to go in round one. So whatever, wide receiver 9. And then you get to someone like Johnny Wilson, who wide receiver 20 by projected draft capital. I think I have him wide receiver 12 or wide receiver 13. And it's just like, I can't not put it because he's like one of the few guys I'm like legitimately excited to talk about. The analytics are off the charts. 2 years ago, he averaged 3.36 yards per route run. That was the highest mark by any Power 5 wide receiver that season, the third best single season mark of any wide receiver in that class. Very minimal fraudulent production. Only 8 career screens. He ran 94% of his routes from the out wide in that season. It was the best season by against man coverage, the best season against press coverage, third best season when out wide, a bunch of key stats like that. And then last year, he dealt with a number of injuries, just like he dealt with in his first two seasons at Arizona State. Still absolutely smashed Keon Coleman in yards per game and yards per route run, 2.42 versus 1.74 by just about like any stat you want to look at. Really just Keon Coleman is supposed to go multiple rounds ahead of him. And Johnny Wilson just trumps him in like every stat that's important. Like Keon Coleman just looks like a poor man's Johnny Wilson for me. The big concern with him is an inability to separate, which you do see in the numbers. He had red flag worthy contested target rates in back-to-back seasons. This is something I've been talking about for a number of years. First about Drake London, but then I tweeted it out, and then PFF shaved like 12 contested targets off it. So he's actually like a green flag guy now. And then last year I talked about it with Quentin Johnston. The problem is like Keon Coleman is also equally red flag by the same stat. Johnny Wilson also 4 more athletic than Keon Coleman, 92.1 spork score. That's my custom athleticism score versus Coleman's 73.8. I don't know. Honestly, I could just like read off stats all day. 4th best in the class by age adjusted yards per route run. 5th best by career yards per route run ahead of Romo Dunze. 3rd best in career targets per route run. 3rd best in yardage market share when actually on the field, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I love him. I just legitimately love him. Like I think he's after the big three, he might have the best wide receiver 1 upside of any receiver in this class. And then if a team drafted him as tight end, guess what? He'd be my second favorite tight end in the class. And so like, I don't think there's that much of a, all right, like you draft him as a wide receiver and he stinks, the analytics were wrong, then convert him to tight end. So there's your out. So yeah, I just legitimately love Johnny Wilson.
For me, I think like the upside projection is he lands with a team that sort of like uses him like Chase Claypool was used as a rookie, where he's that athletic and he's that sort of player where you're talking about the conversion to tight end being in the range of possibilities. None of these guys want to convert
Pittsburgh
to tight end.
Drafting him. I like Pittsburgh. That.
And I Darren Waller, that. Darren Waller's the only one who converted to tight end, and the guy had all this fantasy success, but all these other guys, they don't want to, they want to stay at wide receiver. So I wish more oversized wide receivers. It would be so if Johnny Wilson today said, you know what? I'm a tight end. I'm at NFL teams who draft me. I'm at home right now. I'm bulking up. I'm eating. I'm lifting weights. I'm going to put on 10 pounds. We would go insane in fantasy. Everyone would just get so hyped right now. He would shoot up an underdog immediately if they converted him to tight end. So That's one that we're just going to hope for in our back pocket. But Wilson's another guy that won't cost you much in your current dynasty startups. He will not cost you much if you're doing a pre-NFL draft, you know, rookie draft in like sicko leagues. So one to keep an eye on in the NFL draft, see what sort of draft capital he gets. But one player that actually did convert positions and has sort of become this red hot name that's sort of creeping up people's rankings is Tyrone Tracy. And you had a great tweet that went out where you said he's sort of the ultimate upside wins championships running back in this draft class.
Yeah. So I absolutely love him. Like I had like 90, the bulk of my rookie drafts are pre-draft, pre-NFL draft. And so I had like 90% Antonio Gibson that year. And like, I'm trying to get, you know, 100% Tyrone Tracy. I have a ton of Johnny Wilson, by the way. Jaheim Bell, I think I tweeted too many things out on him, so people have been sniping me. But
You got him in our startup. You got Jaheim Bell. You got Bell.
I think I saved the tweets for after we made that pick. Yeah, so Tracy played six seasons of college football. You don't love to see that, but he played five of those seasons as a wide receiver. I think he had like 17 career carries heading into last year when he converted to running back. He wasn't technically the RB1. He was only like 3.9 carries behind the other guy, but like the efficiency metrics were off the charts. Among all power five running backs in this class with at least 100 carries, he ranked first in yards after contact per attempt, second in missed tackles forced per attempt. Those are two of the most predictive metrics we have. This is all for a guy with zero experience playing the position. He's an extremely high level athlete, 86.9 Spork score. And then you talk about the upside. It's like, that's the dream. That was the dream with Antonio Gibson. And is that he could be like 2016 David Johnson. Tracy was like legitimately impressive as a wide receiver. I have to pull up the numbers, but like he led Purdue in yards per route run as a sophomore over round five pick Amir Smith Marset over Sam Laporta. Adonai Mitchell has never average as many yards per route run in any season that Tracy, you know, now a running back average in that year. So Keon Coleman too, by the way. So just a immense upside. Love the player.
Yeah. I love it. He's definitely one that I've tried to take in a lot of my rookie drafts. Now I have a feeling he's going to be a little more expensive after the NFL draft. More and more people are sort of becoming aware of him. And a lot of really sharp people like yourself, Cody Carpentier, Thor Nystrom, that I've podcasted with, are really high on Tracy right now. Sort of a dynasty theory question, a little follow-up, is Tracy is one of several older running back prospects in this draft class. Should dynasty managers care about running back age on our dynasty rosters when it comes to rookies?
Yeah. So I've always been of the camp that age adjusted metrics are overrated at running back. And like, as important as you think it is at wide receiver, it's underrated. It's like even more important. But I mean, like, especially now, I'm like, really, this is a key reason why I'm deferring more towards projected draft capital than I typically go or would like to. Is just maybe that in today's day and age, the COVID era, the NIL era, the transfer portal era, this matters less because, you know, a lot of these wide receiver prospects, they had their entire fresh high school senior season canceled due to COVID, or their freshman season got shortened to only six games. And then like breakout age, which, you know, I always thought was overrated. Early declare status, which I always thought was overrated anyway, is now just like totally irrelevant because you're now financially incentivized to stay in school. And so, yeah, I will say, I think even if you factor that in though, this wide receiver class is pretty overrated, but certainly for running backs and like, just because you see so many older running backs, it's really not something I penalize players too harshly for. And it is important to, like, you know, some guys have key pieces of context, like, oh, they had injuries in their first two seasons or whatever. But I will just say for running backs, I don't make a big deal about it. Certainly not as much as with wide receivers.
Yeah, and our windows are small anyway when it comes to like how we should be treating the running back position in Dynasty. And of course, this doesn't apply to like your Bijans, your Jahmyr Gibbs, your Breece Hall, but the majority of running backs are sort of like mercenaries on our roster that we want to get as much utility out of before they sort of, you know, expire and we replace them with another running back in the, I guess, the running backs don't matter era. But it's definitely an interesting
concept. No, that's a great point. It's just like, how are NFL teams viewing this guy? It's just like the duration of his rookie contract and then he's dead to us. And so, yeah, maybe we should just be treating the position the same way.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting one this year for sure. So getting back to our wide receivers, we don't need to dive too much into these three stud wide receivers in this class. They're excellent. But is this the best big three that you've ever seen since you sort of started doing this sort of data and this sort of like rookie analysis?
No. 2021 was better. That was Jamar Chase, Devonta Smith. I think I had Elijah wide receiver three, but just pretend I had Waddle wide receiver three. And yeah, I'd put that one up against this one.
So that's an interesting one.
The year before that too. I mean, I didn't Lamb. Like Henry Ruggs, but love CeeDee Lamb, Justin Jefferson. I was way too high on Jerry Jeudy, but yeah, I loved him at the time.
That's interesting. So you're putting a little cold water on that one. So you don't buy into that this is like the class of all classes. I guess that's an interesting
one. I mean, it's up
one.
There. It's up there for sure. But I mean, like Jamar Chase is the only ever perfect prospect I've ever graded, right? Like he's just transcended everything. So I would have him above the other. Devonta Smith was up there. I don't know. It's really good. Like I said, I love it. My wide receiver three from this class is better than any wide receiver in the last two, but it's just kind of hard to compete against Jamar Chase, Devonta Smith, Jalen Waddle, or CeeDee Lamb, Justin Jefferson, Jerry Jeudy.
Yeah. Harrison Jr. versus Chase will be an interesting one to look back on in a few years.
Analytically, it's like not close. It's just like Chase is just such a god, but
Chase is the man. Chase is the man for sure. But let's dive into your wide receiver four. Because it seems like you're ranking Brian Thomas Jr., wide receiver four, slightly begrudgingly. I heard you and Brett talk about it, and you sort of had some red flags when it comes to Brian Thomas's production profile. I think that the draft capital is going to be there. His over-under with a lot of these books is like 17.5 for over-under for where he's being selected. So he'll be a first-round pick, but maybe talk about him as like conceptually as a prospect profile.
Yeah, so he was a one-year wonder. As a freshman, he ran the third most routes on the team, but finished seventh in yards per game. As a sophomore, he was the wide receiver five by yards per route run, and then he broke out as a junior. It was a good but not great season, I'd say. I mean, like once you factor in he was catching passes from the Heisman winner. You know, that's elite quarterback play, and he didn't sniff Malik Nabers. You can't hold that against him too much just because, like, Nabers is such an absolute legend, but it was still only the 15th best season in the class by yards per route run. Even if you like, you know, he led the FBS in touchdowns, which is important. Still only 12th best by touchdown adjusted yards per route run. So, I mean, like it was good. It's just not round one caliber. And then there were a number of red flags from within his profile as well. The biggest one to me is just that, a whopping 42.7% of his yards came on just one route last year. And that was the go route. And so, you know, is he just a one trick pony? Is he really only a deep threat? He's a very good one, but I mean, like I said, the exact same thing about Marvin Mims last year, you know, and I've gotten a lot of grief for that. And you know, who's a really good deep threat, like with maybe, a similar analytics profile is Jermaine Burton. And there's, you know, he's significantly cheaper. And there's a few other arbitrage plays on Burton too, if you want to go down that path. But yeah, very begrudgingly wide receiver four ultimately. I hedged to Brett's film score has him wide receiver four and projected draft capital. But it's also like after the big three, there's just like a deep tier filled with wide receiver twos where it's kind of hard to rank anyone ahead of him or feel all that excited about anyone. They all have their own unique warts and red flags.
Ladd McConkey, you have ranked as your wide receiver 5. Is this, do you view him like everybody likes Ladd McConkey? Like that's, you know, I haven't talked to somebody who's like, I hate Ladd McConkey yet. And I've been talking to everybody about rookies. And I certainly like Ladd McConkey, but let's talk about his fantasy potential. Do you view him as somewhat of a floor play type pick, or do you view his ceiling to be high, or do you view this to be a, I want to see where he lands, and then I'm going to take a step back and kind of view Ladd McConkey's role with this team?
Yeah, I struggled with him. I was like, I could just as convincingly argue that this is like an amazing analytics profile as it is a very poor one. He ranked among the best, I don't know, top 4 receivers in the class by anything per route or per target, crushed in a lot of my favorite stats on a career basis. But then on the other hand, the guy has only 2 100-yard games, and one of those was a game Brock Bowers missed. He looked like significantly inferior to Bowers, even more so than Brian Thomas looked in comparison to Neighbors. And, you know, Bowers isn't even a wide receiver. The dude can't stay healthy. There's all these red flags. So I really struggled with him, but I did see a lot of upside just in that he crushed all of my favorite metrics, the most predictive metrics, career yards per route run, age adjusted yards per route run, depth adjusted yards per target over expectation, et cetera, et cetera. As for upside, like I'll just say it's really good just because it was hard for me to get too excited about a bunch. I like him significantly more than Adonai Mitchell. He's, I don't know, at least tied with Brian Thomas Jr. It feels like just based on the analytics. I will say this though. So in my write-up, I said, he's not just a slot wide receiver because he ran, I don't know, 80% of his routes from the outside last year. And he was so good at that. But, I don't think that's right. I think everyone in the film space is, oh, he's not just an outside wide receiver, not just a slot wide receiver. I think he is. I think he's best suited for the slot. He was like one of the worst wide receivers in the class against press coverage and was better throughout his career in the slot, 2.84 yards per route run versus 2.3 outside. And so like on draft night, I'm hoping that whoever his NFL GM is says, oh, this guy can do it all. He could be inside or outside, but for us, he's going to be a slot wide receiver. And that's what I would like to see. I kind of worry about his physicality and his ability to stay healthy, but he has PPR cheat code upside. He could be like who we all hoped Jerry Jeudy would be, which is just like best suited for the slot, elite separator. But yeah, like I said, after the big three, you know, I'm not as bullish on the class as everyone else, but this is a guy I'm more excited about than not.
Yeah. So to recap Scott's top 5, it's Marvin Harrison Jr., Malik Neighbors, Roma Dunze, Tier Break, Brian Thomas, Ladd McConkey. Wide receiver 6 is Troy Franklin. Wide receiver 7 is Xavier Worthy. Wide receiver 8 is Adonai Mitchell. So obviously a little bit lower than some on Adonai Mitchell. Not as low as Thor Nystrom, who has him like wide receiver 14. But you're
if I went off the analytics, he'd be even lower than that. If I wasn't like deferring to draft capital, yeah. It's easily the worst round one profile of a supposed round one wide receiver in at least a decade. And like in a bunch of other charts, he's just like every chart I've seen that's predictive, he's extreme bottom left, like worse in the class by yards after the catch per reception, worse in the class by whatever you want to look at. The analytics profile is really rough.
Yeah. The analytics people do not like Adonai Mitchell for sure. But one wide receiver you have as wide receiver 9 is one that I'm viewing as a really big value right now in rookie drafts and a guy who had a ton of steam after the Senior Bowl. And it's sort of died down a little bit, but it's Roman Wilson. How are you evaluating him right now?
Yeah. So this is another guy where I kind of deferred to project a draft capital wide receiver 10 and Brett loved him. This was his wide receiver 6. And so, as a freshman, he was the team's wide receiver 5 by routes run per game, only caught 9 passes. As a sophomore, he was again a part-time player, just a 51% route share. As a junior, he was still just a part-time player, wide receiver 3 for the Wolverines, 59% route share, was behind Ronnie Bell for the team high in yards per route run, played behind projected UDFA Cornelius Johnson. And then he broke out as a senior, age 20, 22. It was okay. You know, he ran the majority of his routes from the slot, dominated by dominator rating. That's not a metric I care all that much about. I don't think it's that predictive, but I think it is when you're on a team that's good enough to win the national championship. So I'll give him that. But he eclipsed 100 yards twice in his 46 game career. He's not only a late breakout, but he's a late full-time player. He benefited from minimal target competition and high-end quarterback play, and he's a slot-only type. And I don't like slot-only types. The NFL tends not to like slot-only types. So ultimately, this is a meh at best analytics profile. But like I said, I think this class is pretty overrated analytically, and he did have the high film score and the good projected draft capital, so he has that going for him.
Yeah, I will say that we saw Nico Collins not produce at Michigan, right, with Harbaugh, and so we have, like, maybe this will be a run. So we'll give Wilson a benefit of the doubt. Certainly, he's very, very athletic, and I think he will be a day two guy. And we've also seen a run of guys who've done very well at the Senior Bowl that sort of translated well on an NFL field. So I'm betting on Wilson in that sense. So to round out your wide receiver rankings: Marvin Harrison Jr., Malik Nabers, Roma Dunze, Brian Thomas, Ladd McConkey, Troy Franklin, Xavier Worthy, Adonai Mitchell, Roman Wilson, and then Ricky Pearsall as wide receiver 10. Want to try to dive over here to the running back position. We touched on it a little bit earlier on the show. This is a class where there's not a whole lot of steam and enthusiasm. Some of these early prop bets, we're seeing guys like Jonathan Brooks projected to be drafted in round two, but it's not like early round two. He's getting like somewhere in the 50s with a lot of these over-unders. Trey Benson, Blake Corum, they're in there as well. But let's talk about Jonathan Brooks. Talk about him as a prospect and his fantasy potential.
Yeah, so I like him a lot. He's my RB1 in this class. I think he's a great value where he's going in drafts right now. The key stat I listed is just, like, look at his metrics last year in comparison to Bijan Robinson's numbers in the previous season, and he is, like, right there. He is so dangerously close and actually more involved as a receiver than Bijan Robinson was. This is prior to his ACL injury. And so it's, like, shockingly impressive efficiency metrics. Just about by every stat that my model cares about, he ranked no worse than in the 70th percentile historically by missed tackles forced per touch. That's one of my favorite metrics. His 2023 season ranked behind only years from Javonte Williams, Travis Etienne, Bijan Robinson, David Montgomery, Zach Moss. He had the best yards per target average in the class, easily led in missed tackles forced per reception and PFF pass block grade. And that's the key point here, is, like, he has the best, perhaps even the only, three down running back profile in the class, which, you know, hints at terrific fantasy upside. In a PPR league, targets are worth 2.5 times as much as a carry. And so I really like his three down potential in a class that's otherwise devoid of three down potential.
Yeah, he's definitely an exciting one in this class, especially when you look at how he performed at Texas. Very comparable to Bijan Robinson in terms of his production before he was injured. But let's galaxy brain this one a little bit. Overall rookie class rankings. Let's say Jonathan Brooks is drafted by Dallas at the end of round two, the absolute nuts landing spot. Is this a player where you think he would be should be considered the 105 in single QB leagues, and let's say 108, the 109 in Superflex? Like how high would you be willing to steam him up in the overall context of this class without knowing any other landing spot?
Yeah, I think that's immediately where he goes, and I'm not mad at it at all. It's just, that's what we talked about before, is draft capital and landing spot are so important. And this is the player I feel is the best running back in the class from a fantasy perspective. So, and I like Trey Benson a lot. So yeah, I think that's fair. I think even like Blake Corum, who I didn't like, but is my RB3. If he goes to the Chargers, which like, I don't know, that has to be like the most likely landing spot by a mile. I could see him getting close to that range as well. And yeah, I wouldn't be mad at it.
Yeah. You have Blake Corum as your running back three, sort of in his own little mini tier. But before we get off to like the lower ranked running backs, right behind Jonathan Brooks, you have Trey Benson, who's my RB1 in this class. I got really hyped when I read your comps for Benson, because I had come to the, like the Ken Walker athletic comparison as well, but you sort of had an upside comp for Trey Benson that will get people really, really hyped. And again, you put context, this is the ultimate upside comparison for him, but why don't you talk about that one a little bit?
Yeah. So I don't know if this is insane or not, but like the ultimate upside comparison is like, so with Jonathan Brooks, it's like maybe he's 90% of Bijan Robinson because he was 90% of Bijan Robinson last year, right? And maybe with Trey Benson, he's somewhere similarly on the Nick Chubb spectrum, where again, you have to give the lean to Brooks just because targets are such a cheat code in fantasy. But like if you have Benson, the RB1, I'm not mad at that at all, especially with the ACL injury for Brooks, which we didn't mention. But yeah, so Benson is an extremely high level athlete, 88th percentile by my metric. He's the best tackle breaker in PFF college history. He has the best single season mark. He's the best career mark. He is the best home run hitter in the class. He leads the class in career percentage of carries, gaining 15 plus yards. And then to balance both points, easily leads the class in yards per carry when contact was initiated at or before the line of scrimmage or after the line of scrimmage. And like all of these metrics are the Nick Chubb metrics, where Nick Chubb dominates these metrics first every single year, and no one else comes close or no one else has that sort of consistency. So that's the dream with Trey Benson, is like maybe he just offers the best of all possible worlds as a runner and he's legitimately elite. The only question here beyond the lack of pass catching upside is he just didn't get the volume. And you know, the NFL film heads, I've listened to, I think Daniel Jeremiah was kind of talking about this as though it was sort of like coaching stubbornness and it was like a little bit foolish. And there might be pass catching upside as well. Like he was great on a per target basis. So yeah, like I like Trey Benson a lot, and that's the dream. Although I think I concluded with like, he's somewhere, between Kenneth Walker, Javonte Williams, Khalil Herbert, but like athletically he's like identical to Kenneth Walker. And like, that's a great, you know, dynasty asset.
100%, especially with where you're going to have to select these guys. I think that the whole notion that this running back class is not good is going to create a lot of values for these guys, especially as second round picks in our rookie drafts. I mean, even if you talked about Jonathan Brooks, you know, as the 105 in single QB leagues, if he lands with Dallas, that's still cheaper than we've had to pay for a running back one overall in a class in a few years. So definitely an interesting thing to consider. One big takeaway I had from your Marshawn Lloyd breakdown was you have him RB4, which is good. And this is a guy that I like a lot, but you said that this is the most landing spot dependent running back, maybe in this entire class of like the high end guys.
Yeah. So that's absolutely right. He was so much more efficient in man gap concepts than he was on zone concepts. 7.1 yards per carry on man gap, and then on zone runs, just 4.1 yards per carry. And he was PFF's worst graded running back in the class. So like you really want him to go to a man gap heavy NFL team. The problem is like man gap is pretty rare in the NFL. There are only 8 teams that utilize man gap concepts over half the time. Patriots, Bills, Browns, Rams, Jaguars, Ravens, Bengals, and one other team. Patriots, I guess, would be the dream. They were like close to like 63%. But yeah, so it gives him like very few outs. I mean, I think we're going to talk about my next running back in a second, Audric Estime. Like, I like the analytics profile significantly more. The issue was draft capital did not, Brett Whitefield's film score did not. Brett had Lloyd, the RB2 in the class. But yeah, I mean, Hey, if he goes to the Patriots, Bills, you know, he could absolutely smash.
Bills is an interesting one. You know, people are not looking at the Bills as a landing spot for a running back, but they've had Benson in on a top 30 visit, and they have a huge hole on their team at RB2. I think that they might draft one of these guys. So, you know, everybody will be like, Marshawn Lloyd draft behind James Cook, and Scott will be the one pumping his fist if that draft pick goes down in less than a week now.
Well, look at how run heavy they were under Joe Brady. And then like, look at James Cook's size profile. Like, he's not someone they trust in short yardage. And I don't know if he's well suited for 15 plus touches. I think that's a sneaky good landing spot for sure.
Yeah. James Cook right now, this is a tough one. I think it could be a rough night for James Cook dynasty managers. I have him in my Dynasty Landmines article. I'm like prepared for pain that evening when Buffalo like drafts a running back in round 3 or round 4 that we like, that could take a little bit of work away from. James Cook is like RB10 on keep trade cut right now. He's steamed up big time.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It's about as high as you've ever seen James Cook dynasty value. It's wild right now. But let's talk about Audric Estime, because this was a guy that I was very bullish on heading into the combine. But when you start this is a guy that had the most rushing touchdowns in a single season in the history of Notre Dame's program. Like, that's crazy that you're doing that at Notre Dame. He also has the size. And when you watched him last year, and it's not like I watched every single Notre Dame game, but there were certain games where Audric Estime would run away from defenses and have these like game winning touchdowns. The Duke game, he has a 30 yarder to win the game. The NC State game, he rips off a long run, and then he goes to the combine and had one of the weirdest combines ever. He has this incredibly slow 40. Then he tests well in the other metrics, like the broad jump. But at 89 speed score, I sort of wrote him off a little bit. I certainly dropped him in my rookie rankings, but you still have hope. The pro day was a big correction. Why don't you talk about the whole Audric Estime profile?
Yeah, in a rookie draft, there's like only four running backs I'm drafting. That's Brooks, Benson, Estime, Tracy, maybe some like super deep sleeper, like in a round 5 or late round 4. But those are the four targets. I love Estime, second youngest running back in the class, led the FBS in yards per carry last year. We just talked about this with Brooks versus Bijan, but like, look at Estime's numbers versus Kyren Williams, who was at Notre Dame just a few years earlier, also like very unathletic, but like equally good offensive line play. My favorite stat from Estime kind of crushed every stat, elite by yards after contact per attempt, great by missed tackles, force per touch, one of the best in the class by yards per route run, tied for the best in yards per target. But my favorite stat was that he faced stacked boxes at the second highest rate in the class, and then easily led the class in career box adjusted yards per carry. So he wasn't at all set up for success, but really succeeded in spite of that. And then obviously the combine was this pretty significant red flag. I think my so 89.1 speed score since 2000, 103 running backs have ever recorded a score below that. Only two ever eclipsed 1,000 rushing yards in a single season. That was Kyren Williams and Justin Forsett. But to argue back against this, 89th percentile burst score. And then his pro day, he improved his 40-yard dash time to 4.61, which would actually bump him up to being an above-average athlete by my custom athleticism score, 53.8. And the way I look at athleticism for running backs is like, top 5 percentiles, like legitimately rare, really special. It is worth bumping up a guy like Isaac Guardado. But unless it's that or below the 33rd percentile, I don't really care about it. So like, if we take the pro day number, which, you know, maybe we shouldn't because, you know, pro day times aren't whatever, but these are off of Dane Brugler's numbers, which I trust, they're sourced from NFL teams, then like, yeah, there's no red flag whatsoever with a 53.8 sports score.
Yeah, Estime is going to be an interesting one, and he's certainly a guy who looks like he can absorb volume, maybe profiles to be a handcuff back with, you know, contingent upside, but you know, you definitely are ahead of consensus on him. One guy just to question about is Jalen Wright. Jalen Wright, he's RB6 on your list behind Estime. This is a guy that's steamed up for a lot of analysts. Some analysts have him, you know, as high as RB2. There's some Jalen Wright RB1 people out there. 4.38 40. Brett Whitefield gave him a 76.4 projecting draft capital round 3, and he had this incredible 10-yard split. He's got great size. He had 1,000 rushing yards last year at Tennessee. Basically, just tell us your concerns with Wright and why you have him at RB6, which is not like exceedingly low, but it's a little lower than some might like to see.
Yeah, basically, I kind of said it like felt like there's an 85% chance he's Tevin Coleman, and then he's a 15% chance he's like something else, where like, you know, maybe, you know, he has the bell cow size, so maybe he like lives into that, or maybe he's, you know, shades of Alvin Kamara. Like he said he modeled his game after Kamara, who also played at Tennessee, was also underutilized by the program, but was hyper efficient. And like, that's what Wright has, is he has, you know, low volume, but insane hyper efficiency. The problem is, whereas like the reverse with Estime is like, he ran against exclusively light fronts. Brett said in his draft guide, I think the editor changed it, but he said like, I question whether or not he's legally blind. Like, that's how bad his vision is. But like, yeah, to me, he just profiled as like the sort of guy who's forever capped at like 8 to 11 touches per game, where you're hoping for an explosive play in the running game, but doesn't really do anything beyond that. But, you know, who knows, you know, he was freakishly efficient by yards per carry. And he is a highest end athlete. So, and he has good size, so who knows, but yeah, RB6. And I felt good about it.
Guys got to tell the editors to let Brett Whitefield cook.
I know.
It's not that bad. It's not, you know, you're not going to get too many angry emails for that one. But just to reiterate Scott's top 10 running backs: Jonathan Brooks, Trey Benson, Blake Corum, Marshawn Lloyd, Audric Estime, Jalen Wright, Braylon Allen, RB7, Bucky Irving, RB8, Tyrone Tracy, who we talked about a lot earlier, at RB9, Will Shipley at RB10. Now, my final question for you, Scott, taking a look at this entire draft class, taking a look at sort of the ADP marketplace and the way people are viewing these prospects, what player in this draft class will be the one that fantasy managers look back on in 3-4 years and say, damn, why didn't I take that guy in every single rookie draft?
Oh man, I don't know. I don't know. I guess I'd go with Johnny Wilson. I just, what I'm looking at analytically, it just like doesn't make sense for him to be a projected round 6 pick and not a round 2 or better pick. But yeah, just for like how I'm navigating the rookie drafts, like super flex, like, I just interviewed Jim Nagy, who said, the NFL people he's talking to think Bo Nix and Michael Penix are going to be round 1 players. So, maybe even like mid round 1. So I think like there's really good depth at the quarterback position. I just highlighted the running backs I'm targeting. Tight end, I guess, Brock Bowers, Jaheim Bell's my guy. I like Stover. I think he's super underrated in this class. And there's some upside for guys like Wiley and Theo Johnson. And yeah, this is supposedly the deepest and wide receiver class, and I don't know how many years. So, despite, you know, kind of pouring some cold water on some of these guys, I think this is a class to get excited about. I think we're going to be saying that about more than a few of these players.
Yeah, definitely. I'm excited for this draft class as well. And this is the year you want to have some of those rookie picks. So if you can go make a dynasty trade to get a couple more seconds, third, even fourths, there's going to be some intriguing players available to you at the time. Scott, you've been very generous with your time and your takes. Let everybody know what you have coming out at Fantasy Points heading up to the NFL draft.
Yeah, check out Brett Whitefield's draft guide. Check out my rookie running back, wide receiver, tight end articles. Wide receiver should be dropping in a few days, if not early next week. And watch your live show. We're doing a live draft, Brett and I, and Joe Dolan as well. So be on the lookout for all that. And then after the draft, I do my annual post-draft presser review podcast where I watch literally every second of every post-draft press conference looking for fantasy tidbits and takeaways. And then after that, I'll have my finalized rookie rankings.
That's always a fun one that you do. That was like sort of the Chris Rodriguez enthusiasm last year.
Yeah, I was excited.
Started with that. But that sounds like a, like you're saying that like the last thing, but Scott watches every single, break that down a little bit more, because I think like that's very cool.
Yeah. So it's important to me to know what these GMs are saying. Like, you might see a GM draft Marshawn Lloyd and it's like, yeah, we're going to use them on man gap scheme concepts, but for zone, we're going to stick with the other guy. Or they'll say with like Ladd McConkey, like, remember, like I said, I like him more in the slot. They might give us information on that. Or sometimes you just hear guys just like, they almost jump up on the table and they're doing backflips that they landed this guy. You heard this last year with Chris Rodriguez and Eric Bieniemy, who like loved him. He had a clearly defined role in mind for him. And like, that's kind of the drawbacks of this is, you know, regime uncertainty. Eric Bieniemy is no longer there. So you know, maybe Rodriguez is worthless, but like just relative to draft capital, like where you could take him in rookie drafts, he became one of my guys because of how excited Washington was to have him. They said, oh, we like his pass catching potential. And Eric, you know, like pounded the table for him. So typically there's more to gain from this than not. And I'll just give you basically the TLDR of like 90 hours worth of post-draft press conferences. So, and it'll only be like 45 minutes long. So yeah, check out that podcast.
Awesome. Looking forward to it. He is Scott Barrett. Make sure you're checking out all of his work. Stick with us here at Dynasty Life. I'm going to have a couple more podcasts heading up into the NFL draft. Check out my podcast with Ryan McDowell. That was the Dynasty Life before Scott's. And check out Sigmund Bloom this week on press coverage. We'll see you soon.
Hey, I want to thank you for being part of this broadcast. If you have any thoughts on it, leave a comment. If you enjoyed it, make sure you leave a like. And if you want to see more shows on the Player Profiler channel, subscribe to it. That's how we know you want more.